Well, I think that they created a great thing from nothing. And it's more about the positive than the negative. And I'm really proud of what they did. Of course, I think they could do better because it's many years that they knew it. The Olympic Games were going to be there. But I think it's our Russian mentality that we like to do everything on the last minute.
You're listening to the Mark in Russia broadcast, episode number 100, and I'm Mark.
You're listening to the Mark in Russia podcast, broadcasting from the belly of the bear in Chelyabinsk, Russia. Kick back and enjoy the show. Don't be a pussy.
In 3, 2, 1.
Yeah, I like the way that rolls off my tongue. Episode 100. If you're Russian, episode 100. Well, anyhow, today will be a little bit of a special episode in the respect that I have a guest, and I rarely ever have a guest. My guest today will be Nastya. Nastya recently returned from the 2014 Sochi Winter Olympics, where she worked as a volunteer for the duration of the Olympics. This is a topic that particularly interests me and on many different levels, and I thought that she probably won't be the only person I'll interview on this, actually. I find it a very interesting topic. First of all, in respect that these volunteers presented a window to the world into what today's modern Russian youth are like. I also feel that the young people in Russia who work there as volunteers also learned a lot about themselves that they didn't know. And therefore, it made this a very mutually beneficial experience for these young volunteers. Now, because of the length of this interview, I'm going to break it into two episodes. Today's episode will be about 25 minutes long, and I hope that you find it interesting. I know I found it interesting having my chat. So without further ado, let's listen to Nastya and our conversation about volunteerism at the 2014 Sochi Winter Olympics.
There were so many foreigners.
Really? As volunteers?
Like tons of, especially Canadians and even Americans.
I didn't know that.
Well, yeah, there were lots of, and there was like, I met one American guy who, I don't know exactly where. I think he was somewhere not far from Salt Lake City, and he decided to practice Russian, and he never traveled that far, so.
He may have been like a Mormon, maybe.
Well, I don't know.
Well, that
we didn't talk
Utah,
much.
Especially Salt Lake City, that's the home of Mormonism.
Yeah,
that's,
I know that.
And they learn languages, and they travel all over the world. They're nice people. I mean, I've met plenty of them before, but okay, so I wasn't aware that there were, I always think it was all Russian volunteers.
That's what I thought before. Mm-hmm. I went there, but there were tons of foreigners from, I think in our village there were about, well, like 50 countries represented. Mm-hmm. Or something.
Wow.
Slovak people, Polish, Czech, well, many Canadians, really a lot, British people. Mm-hmm. Too.
I am curious about what made you decide to volunteer for the Sochi Olympics? What made your decision?
Well, actually, me and my family really love the Olympic Games, and we always watch them on TV, and we always cheer for our team. So it seemed to be so great to be a part of it, like to be in the heart of the games itself, to see the athletes, and I really looked forward to the chance to talk to the actual people I cheered for. So, well, and I've never been to Sochi, so it was another chance for me to see a new place and to meet some new people. So many reasons.
Now, what exactly, like, was your job, or did you do multiple jobs when you were there?
Well, when I applied initially, I applied for interpreter, and then I had some other two options, but surprisingly, I got into the different function. Mm-hmm. I got into the medical function. And I didn't know what I was going to do But in the end, I was a medical interpreter.
Now, what kind of a, I'm just curious, what was there like a select, there was a selection process, I know.
Well, some of it very done. Very tough.
Yeah, actually. Could you maybe talk a little bit about that?
Well, it was a long process because I applied in 2011. And so it lasted for about two-something years. They had many stages. First, you had to apply online, register, and complete some forms. Then they had some tests, testing your logics, your math skills.
Math skills?
Yeah, like how can you compute the schedule of train, like when it comes and something like that. And, of course, language skills. And then we had Skype interview. I had a Skype interview that tested, again, my language skills, my psychological resistance. And then there was the process of, I don't know, distribution or something. They looked how many people they have. And oh, no, there was also training here in Chelyabinsk in spring in 2013, I think, yeah. So they also looked how we acted, how we interacted, how could we work in teams and things like that.
So now you're a volunteer, but did somebody pay for your costs to get there or were you self-funded?
Well, I paid for the ticket, the round trip from Chelyabinsk to Sochi, but all the rest was free. So we lived, the accommodation was free, the food was free, but of course we had to buy some things also, like tea in the evening, because when we had our shift, we could eat three times, two times in our volunteer village and once on the venue. So when we didn't work, we had only two meals.
Now, you were working as a interpreter for the medical team. Does this mean that when people got hurt, you were there? And
yeah, that's right.
Any particular stories that you could tell that would be...
Well, actually, luckily, there were no bad injuries and nothing terrible that I had to be involved into and, like, translate some people who were in real pain. There were three medical points, one for the athletes, one for the spectators, and one at the start, so for anyone. And we had a team of eight people in our medical interpreters at this venue because I worked at Sankey Sliding Center. So we switched our places, like, to see what's happening in all of them. Usually, actually, the addresses were from Russian people. Like, they had headache and they asked for the pill or sore throat or something like that. But there was a case when... an Italian guy from OBS, you know, the Olympic Broadcasting System cameraman, he was really ill and he was coughing and he couldn't even do his job well. I think it was training, maybe. And we asked him to go with us and to have an inspection, but he refused. He said, no, I should work. I don't have days off. And we were waiting for him at the end of his shift. We brought him into the medical room and inspected him. So we almost forced him. The next day, he brought many members of his Italian team to have a checkup. Maybe he liked the way doctors treated him. I don't know.
Now, you said you were at, like, a sliding center. What does this mean?
At that venue, there were three competitions taking place, three disciplines. Luge, bobsleigh, and skeleton.
So. That is so cool. These are, like, my favorite events at
really?
The Olympics. Oh, I would die to see these events.
I didn't even know much about these sports before I came, and actually I was disappointed when I realized I was placed there, because I dreamed to be at Laura, the biathlon and cross-country ski center.
No one's going to get hurt there. I mean, the skeleton, I mean, this is, people died last Olympics. A Georgian guy died.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I'm not laughing because it's funny. I'm saying it's dangerous. I mean, to be to work along with a medical team, I'd be very happy if I were in that event to see you there. I mean, the difference is, okay, luge, feet first, skeleton, head first, mm-hmm. bobsled, just,
yeah. Yeah, they're inside of this bob.
So you spent most of your time there at the slide. And explain, like, where you stayed compared to where you went each day. Explain, like, a little bit about your
daily
day.
Routine.
Tell me your routine.
Well, I was quite lucky with the schedule because it wasn't really tough. I was off every fourth day. So I had a chance to see Sochi. I had a chance to go to some other competitions. And everyone actually asks me, have you seen the opening ceremony and the closing ceremony live? No, I haven't. And, well, I'm not even regretting it because I was there not for the show. I was there to see the competitions. That is why it was more interesting for me to see biathlon, let's say. Well, to see whatever other competitions, but not the opening ceremony. I watched it on TV and, well, it was fine.
But like, okay, so let's say on a day you would work, so you'd work 3 days on, 1 day off, right? Three
mm-hmm.
on, one.
Yeah.
So let's say it's one of those 3 days. Tell me from the time you woke up, I mean, even when you woke up, explain the routine a little bit.
Well, the schedule was really different. Some days I worked from morning till afternoon, let's say starting at 7 a.m. until 3 or 4 p.m. Other days I worked from 3 to 4 p.m., depending on what time the trainings were or the competitions were. So as I told you, there were eight of us, so sometimes we worked three of us, four of us, or some days even like five people.
But just say like some small details. You mentioned like food. Explain like where would you, explain where you lived, where you would eat, what you would eat.
Okay, so we had a place, I lived in the mountain cluster. It was a big volunteer village. We had a canteen, like in the middle of the village, a big tent, kind of. So you could have breakfast from 5 to 12, for 5 a.m. to 12 p.m., and the dinner was from 5 p.m. to 12 a.m., I think. So whenever you wake up, you could go there and have breakfast. Well, once we had this accreditation card, so whenever you come to have your meal, you kind of, what do? You place it close to the reader. Yeah, it clicks or whatever. They say, okay, you can have your meal. When I just came on the 1st of February, the meals were, well, I wasn't expecting anything super grand. I knew that everything was for free, so I shouldn't expect any shrimp or I don't know. So
no lobster tails.
Well, surely no lobster tails. The first meal seemed to be really fine. But the problem was they kind of fed us the same thing almost every day or every other day. So when you eat for 2 weeks the same thing, you kind of get like really bored of it. But, well, so you wake up, you take a shower. I lived in a two-bedroom apartment, so there were eight of us in the two-bedroom, mm-hmm. so four people in one room. We had a kitchen, but there was no cooker, stove, or mm-hmm. so we couldn't cook.
But these were all new, weren't they?
Yeah. They were.
I seem to recall, I think on Facebook you had a photo of where you were living. Maybe. Did you post a photo of where you were living?
Not the inside.
Not the outside. The outside.
The outside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it looked nice. Mountains in the background. Very picturesque.
Mm-hmm. Well, everywhere in Krasnaya Poljana, it was really picturesque. Mm. The scenery was so amazing. Every morning you go out, you breathe this mountain air, and it's so nice. So you walk around your building, and you see the mountains. Mm-hmm. Well, of course, it's amazing.
I have a question for you. Did you have a pillow?
Yes, I did. We all had pillows. You mean this, the information on the internet that athletes were lacking pillows? I read about it on the internet too, but I don't know about this issue. I mean, I didn't experience anyone asking me to hand my pillow to athletes or something.
Because I envisioned them, because it said that they were getting some from volunteers, and I was thinking, you know.
Well,
comrade, give us your pillow.
No. It didn't happen to me. Yeah, it was really fine with the linen. When I was registered, I went to the warehouse and I got my sheets and pillows and blankets were already in the room together with the bed. So no issues with the linen.
Dogs?
What do you mean?
Packs of wild dogs roaming?
Well, it was actually... Well, I saw some dogs and we were surprised with my friends that there were many puppies running around and no one cared. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know why. Not like tons of, but in our village there were maybe four.
No, it was, I mean, to me it doesn't mean anything. It's just the media kept reporting on packs of dogs. They were like, I didn't enjoy the way the press, meaning Western press, covered it. They were like a bunch of babies and idiots. But
Well, here in Chelyabinsk, you can see cats walking along the streets because the people who have the cats sometimes let them go for a walk. So it's kind of the same thing. You see dogs walking around. Well, not packs. I don't know.
Now, when you do anything new or go someplace new, the first day or two that you're there, everything is just different. Tell me, do you remember any of your impressions that you had when you first arrived?
Well, everything was really new to me because, as I told you, I haven't been there. So I looked around with big eyes. I took pictures from the bus because I went there by bus from the airport. And even though we were running quite fast, I still tried to get this shots from the window. I really liked the view around, and I was told there was no snow. So I was like, let's see. Of course, when I arrived at the airport, there was no snow, and the grass was green, the palm trees were there. So I was thinking, maybe they were right, maybe there is no snow. But as we rode in a bus, well, the snow arrived. I saw it on the peaks of the mountains, and on the venues there was snow. In the mountain cluster there was no problem with it. So I was surprised that so many things were built, especially like the really nice road, this Lastochka train, and my first impression, I was really surprised with how many security people were there. Like every 100 meters you had a policeman standing there doing nothing. So, and I felt really safe. That was my very first impression.
And was the security, I mean, it was there, it was visible, which it should be visible for people, but was it obtrusive or unobtrusive?
Well, I just felt sorry for the guys standing there along the river, along all the way of Lastochka train. But well, no, it wasn't obtrusive.
Oh, all along the route of the train?
Well, first days, yeah. Later, I didn't see that many of them, no. And I saw, like, the tents, kind of, they were trying to hide them with these covers. So you could feel that there are many people, but it's not like they were walking all around you and you felt like, oh my God, too many police. Mm-hmm. No, not like that. But as far as I know, there were a great many of them they had special uniforms, the purple ones. When they were on the venues, at these checkpoints, they were wearing these uniforms. They were in just regular police uniforms. And the girls told me that they were also like wearing normal clothes.
And how about you as a volunteer? Did they provide you with some sort of a uniform?
Well, of course, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about what was the uniform like?
Getting the uniform was a big pain in the neck because it took much time. I think we had to stand... Well, you're getting your accreditation card and the uniform on the same day. So you get there and you have to stand for many hours. I think it's because I came on one of the busiest days, like the beginning of February. So I got my accreditation card and then I was standing on the line to get the uniform. It was long, but they gave us a lot of things I didn't even expect. Well, I was reading the guide and it said that they were supposed to give us like many items.
Now the uniform, and well, tell me, what did they give you?
They gave us a big bag. They gave us a backpack. How is this called? The bag that you wear on your
It's actually called a fanny pack. Well, it looks like a snake swallowing a small animal, right?
Well, maybe. So mountain cluster and coastal cluster had different uniforms. We had warmer uniforms, so we had warm pants, two jackets, three polo shirts, a cap, the thermal pants and the shirt. The boots, of course. Well, no socks.
Now, just a question, were you able to take those home? Were those yours?
Yeah, I've brought all the things, and we were sitting, like, me and two of my roommates were sitting on my luggage bag to fit my stuff inside with the uniform. Oh, and the hat, and I'm planning to give it as souvenirs to my family.
Well, I was just thinking that's a nice thing for your family, and nice souvenirs for you, too.
Well, of course.
You know, I mean, I think just to get all those uniform things almost makes it worthwhile. I'm just joking, but, you know.
Well, my sister is looking forward to get the hat, they already kind of decided what they are going to get from my set.
Were there any memories or anything that you experienced when you were there that you feel you'll maybe even tell your grandchildren about someday? Anything that struck you that hard?
Well, I think I'll be telling them about the whole thing. There are many things that I could tell them about. You mean something very, very impressive or?
Yeah, just something that really stuck out. It could be good or bad. It doesn't, you know, whichever. Any really strong memory that really made an impression on you when you were there?
Well, I think the beauty of the place itself. Because now I'm recommending to all of my friends and colleagues to go there and actually see what was built. All the cable cars, especially the cable cars. I think that's the most amazing. Because when you ride them, you have such a great view. You can see all the trails, all the slopes. Everything was so nicely made, so white and sparkling, especially when it's sunny. It's just so beautiful.
Now, Nastya, I mean, you're Russian. You've traveled around. I mean, you went on work and travel with us twice, I think, right? Twice. Was it two times or three?
Well, work and travel twice.
And then you spent a year in America on the Fulbright program, teaching in Manhattan, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
So you've traveled around, and like many Russians, and it's the same with Americans, we often don't get a chance to see much of our own country. We're always getting in planes going far away. After going there, how do you feel different about, if or do you feel different at all about Russia?
Seeing my own country. Well, I always felt like it's not fair. As you were saying, that I traveled to America many times and I've seen more cities in America than I've seen in Russia. And I always felt it was unfair. So, but the problem is, I don't know why. It's quite expensive in Russia to travel. I mean, the plane ticket is expensive because I spent 20,000 rubles for the round trip to Sochi. And for the same price, I think I can fly from Moscow to New York or something like that. So this is the problem. If the prices were lower, I'm pretty sure I could visit some other places. Especially now that I have a friend in Vladivostok and I have a friend in St. Petersburg. So I'd love to go to these cities. I'd love to see, to have a cruise along Volga River. But it's all about, like, you should have a good companion. That's the first thing. Because you can go to the U.S., I think, just by yourself, and mm-hmm. it's fine. But in Russia, I don't know, maybe I don't feel that safe to go alone.
But I just, what I'm looking at also is, like, was it a sense of pride to see what they put together? And really, what was a few short years, it was really about 6 years since they started, maybe 7 years from pretty much nothing for much of that to what you saw when you were there. How did you feel about that?
Well,
or did you feel anything?
I overheard a conversation between two women on the street, and one was saying, "Look at this! Look at the ground. So many cigarette butts, and they didn't clean this. They didn't do this." And the other one was saying, "Come on, look up at the mountains, at the cable cars, and the great railway station they built. You should look at to the positive side." Well, that's true. If you are looking for some negatives, you could find them, obviously. And there were some things that, well, they were not completed, maybe. But in spite of those things, everything looked great, really. Especially, like, as I told, Ласточка train and the venues. And, well, I think that they created a great thing from nothing. And it's more about the positive than the negative. And I'm really proud of what they did. Of course, I think they could do better because it's many years that they knew it. The Olympic Games were going to be there. But I think it's our Russian mentality that we like to do everything on the last minute. That is why, like, the trees were just planted and they had these ropes holding them in some places. But in general, they did a lot of things, and I think it's more positive than negative. Well, it was my first volunteering experience, but a lot of the people who were there, it wasn't their first experience, and some of them had actually much experience. Some of them participated in Kazan Universiade a couple of years ago. Mm. Yeah. So, and people were really eager about what they were doing because, let's say, doctors whom I worked with, the notion of volunteering is quite foreign in Russia, I think, still. So when many people asked me, "So are you getting paid for this?" I'm like, "No, I'm volunteer." So volunteers are not getting paid ever. And they were really surprised, and they were asking me, "So did you pay for your ticket here?" And I said, "Yes." And they said, "What about your job? Are they paying you while you're away?" I said, "No, they are not paying me while I am away." And people were just shocked. They said, "Why? Why are you here? What are you trying to find here that is worth so much trouble?" But when people know that you came there just because you want to be a part of it and you want to help, they were really impressed. And I think the good thing about this Olympic Games will be that more people are going to know about volunteering, and they would understand better that there are a great number of people who do this for free, and they enjoy it a lot. And, well, maybe this will spread.
Thank you for listening to the end of my broadcast in my episode number 100, kind of a special episode. And I hope that you come back again, perhaps as early as next week, when I post part two of this interview. And following both of these at a not too late, much later date, will be an interview with another volunteer from a different perspective. But thank you very much for listening. Thank you, and goodbye.